Thank you for the introduction. And I am not Kristen Hannum, who was originally scheduled to do the presentation. She's a postdoc that works in our lab, and she's soon on her way to New Zealand to pick up some more techniques to use in some of the projects. This project is on various factors affecting yeast assimilable nitrogen concentration. And why yeast assimilable nitrogen concentration? What is it? When you make wine, when you crush the juice out, you need to supply the yeast with nitrogen, and they can use the readily available forms, including ammonium, some of the easier to get at amino acids, but not some of the ones that are ring compounds like proline. So there's a titration method you can use to calculate this value, and it's quite important for determining the rate of fermentation and hence the wine quality. And the value you aim for is somewhere in that 200 to 480 part per million range, and definitely above 140. Below 140 milligrams per liter, you tend to get something that's called stuck fermentation, and you have to add diammonium phosphate fertilizer, which is not a good thing for the customer to think about, putting fertilizer in the wine. And it's quite a common problem in the Pacific Northwest. In fact, I think it was a recent paper that said about a third of the orchards had low yeast assimilable or YAN concentrations. And these are a few values from some of the Merlot, Pinot Noir, Cabernet Sauvignon vineyards in British Columbia. You can see they're well below the 140 part per million range. These were some that we looked at while we were setting up trials. And so we wanted to take a look, sort of a retrospective look at what factors affect, what management factors affect the yeast assimilable nitrogen concentration. There are a number of things that are going on. There's deficit irrigation that's quite common in grapes to improve the flavors. They tend to run at a nitrogen fertilization rate, which is rather low because they don't want excessive vigor. They want to get the good compounds in the grape. And, of course, you can adjust the crop load as well. So we're taking a look at some of these factors. We had an opportunity to look at these through some of our longer-term trials, and that's one of them in the top picture there. They all tend to be randomized complete blocks, split plots, with the subplots, usually about 5 vines per plot, about 6 replications. So I'm going to go over some of the trials. We had one that was an irrigation by nitrogen fertilizer trial. And on the irrigation side, we had what we call full irrigation here, daily irrigation at 100% evapotranspiration as measured by an atmometer, which you see in the photograph below. It's connected to a computer so that it applies the irrigation the next day, depending on the previous day's evapotranspiration demand. And this treatment was applied throughout the growing season. We had a reduced irrigation cycle, which is only 50% of the evaporative demand, done the same way for those 3 years. Daily, and then we changed in 2009 and 2010 to also accumulate water stress over 3-day periods. We changed the frequency of irrigation but still put on the same amount of water. So in the nitrogen amendment part of that trial, we applied this is broadcast below, this drip irrigated broadcast below the drip emitters. And that shouldn't be kilograms, it's grams of urea per nitrogen per vine, 0 to 20, as you can see, applied twice at split, applied at bud break, which is a standard time at late dormancy, or half at full bloom, which is not so common, but we feel we need to spread the application out. And I calculated the equivalent rate, or the equivalent rates in kilograms of nitrogen, you can see are rather low. That probably the rate is 40 to 50 pounds in the industry. Taking a look at the irrigation over the 4-year period, and remember there's a slight change in the irrigation, stress irrigation, the YAN concentrations, or YANC, I'll call it from now on. You see maybe 2 of the 5 years those differences were significant, and there's a tendency for the deficit irrigation or the less water applied to be a higher concentration, but you can see also I've dotted in the 140 line there, not always above that line. course, you have to look at the other factors that are affected here, and this is sort of a generalization of this irrigation treatment over the time period, and this is statistically significant, and the arrow tells you the direction it goes as you stress them, as you put less water on. There's a yield penalty and some effect there, and a little bit of an advancement of maturity, which is reflected in pH, but interestingly not in sugars. So there is a concern with the irrigation throughout the season on yield, so you're going to pay a penalty there. This is the nitrogen concentrate, yank concentrations according to the nitrogen application rate, and you can see certainly as over the years again, and then the rates going from the zero, which is a white, to the higher intensity colors being the higher rates, and you can see and where there's that pretty well we get significant differences in every year, so it's certainly an effective method. But again, not always, but a tendency for that high rate to be close or above the level. So certainly a higher rate of application would be effective there. And then if you look at the other effects on the plant, a less effective yield, not very responsive to nitrogen in grapes. Again, some advance in maturity, though. The pH, when the pH is up, that's an indication that the maturity of the grapes is moved on. We had another trial looking at irrigation and crop load reduction, irrigation of the main plot units always. The full irrigation again as previously, except this irrigation started at 2/3 full canopy because there's some indication that early water stress is going to be negative for yield. A reduced frequency irrigation where we had accumulated the evaporative demand, applied all the water after 3 days, so you get we had some PDR numbers that go with these, but you get a greater drawdown in moisture content. Another one where we just applied less water, 50% of the water, and then a combination where we applied less water and less frequently. And these were applied from 2/3 full canopy through the growing season. The crop load reduction was applied when the grapes are at pea size, which in our region is about the first week of July. And what we did is we reduced the crop, the clusters, to one per shoot, or let them set naturally. And when you look at the irrigation treatments again, you can see moving to the, I guess it would be your left, or no, your right, is more water stress. You can see again there's a tendency for the ones that had less water applied to have higher yeast symbol nitrogen concentration. But in this case, we did have on some of these treatments a yield penalty in one of the years. Berry weight is sort of one of the indexes of yield. And again, some of that 2/3 of the time, some change in maturity. And these are what the yank values look like. You can see that this, by the way, the nitrogen in this one was all the same, but applied by fertigation, which is a much more efficient way to apply the nitrogen. If you apply it over a six-week period and split up into small concentrations, you can see the yank is generally higher. But one of those 3 years is actually statistically significant, but you can see there's not that much of a difference by reducing the sink into which the nitrogen is going. And the crop load reduction, there are some effects on sugar, less clusters, more concentration of the sugar, again, a little bit of a maturity, not a lot of effects. So really, as a summary, from the point of view of yank or yeast symbol nitrogen, deficit irrigation consistently increased, but it was not always significant. So those people that are applying deficit irrigation for other reasons, for flavor compounds, is probably going to be generally moving the yen in the right direction. Nitrogen amendment increased only with the high rates of N. It's not surprising if you add more nitrogen, it's going to get partitioned into the grapes. But we're actually looking at, because of some of the negative effects, we're looking at targeting the nitrogen by foliar sprays, and we're applying 15N, and these are part of the techniques that Kristen is in New Zealand picking up at the present time. We're looking at where the nitrogen is going to be going, which forms it goes in by either soil or targeted by foliar sprays, and they are looking fairly good, preliminary data. Crop load reduction, probably slight increase, but probably not going to be a practical significance for increasing yank. We're holding out most for these targeted foliar urea sprays because you don't get any other effects of the nitrogen response. So with that, I'd like to thank you. And for those interested in contacting Kristen, she's got her Ag Canada email there as well. So thank you very much for your attention. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to handle them. Yeah, it was 5 grams, so it would have been quite a low rate, actually. You know, on that zero, you had 0, 5, 10, and 20. It was 5, but it was split up and applied. You know, you put it, we bring it in through the Venturi, through the drip irrigation line. So you apply weekly and let it suck up during the week. There's a certain ratio it comes in at. Spreads out, so tiny applications, but over a 6-week period. Much more efficient.
Because it did seem to have a fairly positive effect. So the crop loading didn't seem to have an effect, but it almost seems like that fertigation.
Yes.
So why would you be looking at the foliar spread fertigation? Is it just the cost?
Well, we can do fertigation in our areas, but generally speaking, the industry yet hasn't gone to drip fertigation. Vincor, which is one of the companies, is experimenting there. And personally, I think that's the way to go. Tiny applications, and you can target, and you don't get those high application rates, but they're not all there yet. And it's quite difficult to do it because you've got the cultivars are all split up into small blocks, and they aren't necessarily these big zones that you can do. It's quite a complicated irrigation setup for a lot of the zones, so it's not so easy technically to do that. But I think that's another obvious way of targeting it. The foliars, they do spray a number of things, so they do already have a tradition of doing that. So it's not an alien idea in that sense. But we're actually, you know, you can have, yes, it's inefficient. Of course, some of it just comes down to the canopy, probably enters through the ground as well. But academically, it's quite interesting because we're putting the nitrogen in and assimilating it through the leaves. So that's why we're looking at which compounds are N15 labeled, as opposed to the pathway through the soil is maybe through the root, and then, it may be not quite so quick a root, whereas you're intervening directly within the crop year. But we're going to sort of try and figure that out from this 15N work to find out where is it stored first, then remobilized in. There's a lot of remobilization in perennial plants, but...
Questions? Jerry, at the beginning you mentioned this being a problem in the industry. It's not something I was familiar with, but this is just how common is it, and how putting fertilizer into the tanks.
Yeah, diammonium phosphate, ammonium form fertilizer. Yeah, there's a paper published in the Pacific Northwest, which includes Oregon, Washington, and not so much data from BC, but about a third of the orchards were like that, a lot of the red wines. In BC, I'm not sure, but we did a preliminary survey to select sites for these foliar sprays, and everyone we looked at was less than 140. So it was 100%, but I mean, we were being targeted by Mike Watson, those guys, into certain vineyards, you know, that they knew they had so-called stuck fermentation, or they put the diammonium phosphate in. Not everybody, so it's fairly common. And it's not such a good idea, because if I were to tell you I fertilize my wine with diammonium phosphate, it's probably not going to be an incentive to buy. It's common all through the Pacific Northwest. There's a little secret. I'm letting you in on a little secret here. But, you know, we're all chemicals, really. But, you know, it depends on how you look at these things, right? The consumer won't look at the same way. So I think it would be better to go the natural route. And that's what's behind the work.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.